Hey guys, this is OVW Rush Division Champion Dimes, and you are listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Well, hello there. My name is Matt Sin.
I'm Micah Sin.
This is Wrestle Life Radio. And this is our new intro.
Yeah, you can't tell me to say my name if I beat you to it. It's like a game of chicken.
Okay.
Checkmate.
I don't know where to go from here. We've never opened the show like this before, and it was totally unplanned.
That's right. I'm a wild card.
You just want to move on? So move straight
That's
on?
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. We haven't done it in a while. Give me a very big this day in wrestling history.
This day in wrestling history.
It's nice. It's good. Good. 13 years ago today, Bobby Lashley announced that he had left WWE. But I told Micah before it started, I'm very excited to talk about this day in wrestling history, and here's why. Because the sentence says, Bobby Lashley announces on his MySpace page that he had left WWE.
Wow. And
I forgot MySpace was a thing. Was MySpace a thing 13 years ago?
I don't feel like it. I mean, I like, it's like still it a it's a website. Like, they have the only URL still, but nobody goes there.
I know. I just... Facebook was definitely a thing in 13 years ago, and I think they overtook MySpace basically immediately, so.
Yeah, it didn't take long. Once they stopped requiring college emails, everybody funneled in there.
Yeah, so it's a smart business decision. So yes, Bobby Lashley announced 13 years ago today on his MySpace page that he had left WWE.
Which is weird, because I feel like I just saw him Sunday in WWE. Funny how that works. Back. I know we already had a Royal Rumble show, but believe it or not, folks, I'll give my opinion. I actually liked the show, which is not something I've said about WWE in a while. I just wanted to throw that in there. I know I crap on them every time we talk about them, but positive results from Royal Rumble last Sunday, I think it was.
That's because the show was good.
It was good. Yeah, it's funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a battle royal of our own this week, though.
Right. You want to talk about Beach Break?
Let's do it.
All right. So the tag team battle royal actually opens the show.
Yeah, and what was the weather like at Beach Break? Because you were there.
It was effing freezing.
Yeah,
it was so cold.
They cut over to the commentary desk, and I'm expecting, like, you know, Hawaiian shirts or something like they did at Batch of the Beach. They've all got on, like, jackets and vests, and I'm like, it must be very cold there.
Yeah. It was somewhere, it was about 42 when we got there, and by the time we left, it dropped to 36, 37. It was friggin' cold. And Rolf Wiggler was over in the audience, and Carol's like, Dolph's brother is wearing friggin' shorts and a t-shirt. I look over there, and I think it's because, like, he was actually in his wrestling gear, but he had taken that off during a commercial so he could be part of the Lumberjack match.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so they did have a lot of heaters ringside, I could tell, because, like, when you're watching, like, the waves and everything. So maybe it's a little bit warmer ringside. But yeah, I thought that was funny. Do you think they just went with Beach Break because they already had all of the props? And they needed a special show.
I think Bash at the Beach was about a year ago, right?
Yeah. But, like, it's bad timing, February, in an outside event.
Well, the plan was for them to take a break and go to Miami, remember?
Yeah.
And that got cut off, so.
Thankfully. Yeah. Thankfully. Sorry, all of our fans in Miami. We beat you.
It's not like you're there anyway. You don't live in Jacksonville.
Yeah, but I get to go to Revolution now.
That's true. That is true.
I wasn't driving to Miami for anything.
That's
might not make
way.
It back.
So the Tag Team Battle Royal, there were a lot of teams, so forgive me if I'm forgetting any. Private Party, Top Flight, The Dark Order, which included Uno and Grayson, as well as Silver and Reynolds.
all of the Inner Circle. In
yeah, all of the Inner Circle. There were three teams, even though...
Even though... This is my pet peeve of the match.
Yeah, me too. I looked over at my beautiful wife and I said, look, I don't want to complain. Because, man, I love all three of these teams, but one week ago, they said Jericho and MJF, the official tag team of the Inner Circle, and then they were just all in here.
Yeah, it was really weird. I told Riley, I was like, did, like, half the tag teams get COVID and they had to, like, fill in or something? What's going on?
Yeah.
I don't understand that decision at all. And, like, they didn't even mention it on commentary or anything. They didn't say, like, oh, the match was already booked. It was just, they were there, and it upset me more than it should have.
Yeah.
But it's, I guess it's okay. I don't know. It's Jungle really, Boy and
Luchasaurus, by the way.
Yeah, that's Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. Yeah. It is, it was aggravating though, when you have a battle royale with what, 8 teams?
At least, yeah.
About 8 teams, and 3 of them are from one faction.
Yeah.
I mean, if you got 6 men in the battle royale that are working together, I mean, it may as well, be the NWO at this point.
The Acclaimed were in there.
Oh, yeah. How can you forget that?
So.
And they cut off easily. They cut off Judas.
They did.
I thought was actually a good booking decision to get a little bit of heel heat
on the Acclaimed.
And Jericho, I don't know if he was selling or not, but he did not look happy.
Well, his pyro was still going off.
Yeah. It was weird. He looked at the ref and I'm like, "What the F just happened?" It was funny.
There were a couple things that happened in this match, but the only really important thing, well, there were a couple. One, the Good Brothers came out and eliminated Private Party. No, that's not true. They eliminated Isaiah Cassidy because Mark Quinn was already eliminated.
Yeah.
And then Nick Jackson was like yelling at him because he didn't want them to cheat, of course, which allowed, I believe, MJF. Yeah, it was MJF to toss out Nick.
And MJF then he did the pose.
Jericho. Yeah, did the pose. It was really good.
Yeah, that was a good spot. So a couple things I think are worth mentioning. I'm pretty sure there were 2 botched eliminations in this matches, just from my vibes I got while watching it. The first one was Matt Jackson, because Santana eliminated Matt Jackson onto the rampway.
Yeah.
And first of, like, he did a sunset flip over the ropes to the outside. Like, he eliminated himself almost, it looked like.
Yeah.
Maybe Santana just, like, blocked it. I don't know. Because the camera cuts were kind of all over the place. There was a lot of action to follow.
Yeah.
But then, like, commentary didn't mention it. The cameras didn't follow Matt Jackson out. They didn't say, hey, you know, they had the stipulation. But, you know, here we go. Matt Jackson's gone now, so I guess it's up to Nick. They didn't say anything about it. Matt Jackson was just gone. And I was waiting for them to be like, well, actually, the ramp doesn't count. Which would have been a wrong decision, but I thought that's where they were going. But no, he just left. And it wasn't really mentioned. Also, I don't think that Jungle Boy was supposed to get eliminated when he did.
No.
He had a spot where he was basically getting teamed up on by all of the heels, right?
Yeah.
And he did like a flip to the outside. Or I'm sorry, he was like thrown outside the ring. And he like went to grab the rope and it looked like he slipped. The final trio was supposed to be, or the final two, I think, was supposed to be Jericho and Jungle Boy, and I think they had to call an audible.
Okay.
That's just my guess based on what I was seeing in the match. I think the match still worked pretty well. I mean, it was a cluster all tag team battle royals. I've never seen one of these is not a cluster. So many people in one ring.
Right.
But I think the match still came off okay and wasn't too, like, hectic. But it did seem like they were calling audibles. Like, it didn't seem like it went as it was supposed to.
That's interesting. So I can tell you that almost every single major elimination happened on the hard camera side, which made it really easy to follow. I love this battle royal because live, it was super easy to follow. Basically every elimination happened on the one side of the ring. All the major eliminations.
Matt Jackson. Thriller.
Matt was in the absolute opposite side. So, and he did seem to be kind of eliminated out of nowhere because I didn't even know what was going on. So I saw him eliminated and I'm like, man, that's really early for Matt to get eliminated. So, and I also was surprised about Jungle Boy because I figured he would be the last one against Jericho. So
he was so over in this match.
Oh man, everyone was singing a song in the middle of the match. This is the first time that it's happened, like, where almost all the fans were doing it during the match. And it was really great. It was really cool.
He was definitely trying to hide a smirk.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's obviously just super appreciative of it. But it's a great song, and I think it's going to propel him to be one of the top baby faces of the company before too long.
Oh, yeah. 100%. But there was another spot that I wanted to point out, and that is that it was Sammy, MJF, Jericho, and Darius Martin, I believe it was. No, MJF was already eliminated. I can't remember. But it was Jericho, Sammy, Darius Martin, and somebody
Max
else. I think
Caster,
it was the Acclaimed Kid. Yeah,
Max Caster.
So Max Caster and Sammy Guevara were on the apron, and Jericho eliminated Max Caster, but because of that, Sammy was also eliminated. So Sammy was obviously yelling at Jericho, asking what was going on, and that obviously is going to push towards something later in the show. Also, my favorite spot of the night was Isaiah Cassidy jumps off the top rope, screams at like his little girly scream that he does. Every single wrestler turned around, stared, and watched him hit the floor, and then they went back to fighting. It was absolutely terrific.
Yeah, and they didn't catch any of that on camera.
No?
So something else was happening. It's one of my issues with the camera cuts of this match. Something else was happening like on the apron.
Yeah.
And someone was like about to get eliminated, and I heard Isaiah Cassidy scream. The camera cut, so I didn't get to see what happened on the apron, but it also cut just late enough to where we didn't get to see Isaiah Cassidy actually do the move. Like, they did a replay, like a picture-in-picture replay after that, so that's kind of saved it. But yeah, so it's too much action to follow, I guess, really.
Yeah. I gotcha. Well, cool. long and short of it is Chris Jericho and MJF won, and they're going to get a tag title match, which is probably one of the more obvious answers. I thought the Bucks were going to win because they teased, you know, picking the Good Brothers, but...
Can I be honest, though? I'm not really psyched for that match at all.
No? Why not?
I'm just not. I just don't think that's going to be a good fit. I don't know. Okay. I haven't been super impressed with Chris Jericho and MJF teaming, to be honest. I think they're both great singles wrestlers. I don't really like either one of them in a tag team. But yeah, I'm just not super stoked. I don't know if they're going to put on a great match against the Young Bucks. Maybe. I hope I'm proven wrong. But there's...
Even if nothing else, they'll put on good character work.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure it'll lead to some good shows in the lead up to Revolution.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll have some great interactions between the Bullet Club and the Inner Circle.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not super stoked about it, but we'll see. Maybe they'll change my mind. Okay. Maybe they'll start next week and start getting me hyped up for the match.
Right. Jay Cargill has like this workout video.
Yeah.
She's a monster.
She's, oh my gosh. So my wife is really into bodybuilding and working out, and we're watching it, and she was like, I really want to know how much she can lift. And then she picks up 2 80-pound dumbbells,
right,
and just presses them above her head. And she's like, oh, that's a lot. I was like, yes, that woman could beat every man I know.
Right.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And this is how they should have introduced her. I don't know if they're doing like a reset on her or what, but this is how she should have been introduced. I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like having her come out with a promo, which was fine. Like, yeah, her delivery was kind of slow, but it was her first ever time on television in front of a crowd and all that. But, like, it's almost like bringing Brock Lesnar out with a promo. Because, like, looking at her, she's a female Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
She's super jacked. She's super intimidating. And I feel like this is the way they should have introduced her. Like, hey, look at this woman. She is super strong, and she's going to beat everyone. And then they had, like, the little logo. It just said Jade. I don't know. Maybe she'll go by Jade. Maybe they'll pull WWE and drop her last name. But, like, she has, like, this Storm Lightning Bolt logo, which is really cool because she actually has done some Storm cosplay in the past, which looks awesome.
I saw that. It looks amazing.
So if I'm thinking maybe her ring gear is going to be inspired a little bit by Storm. That would be super cool. But yeah, I thought this was a really good package for her. And I think this is how they should have originally introduced her, but maybe they're doing a little soft reset.
I thought it was really good, too. And at some point in this, I don't know if this was shown on television. It was absolutely not really like a big part of the show.
No.
But she did come out at some point during the show, and she's in the crowd.
Okay, I didn't see that at all on TV. So yeah. I don't know if that was... Maybe they showed it and I just wasn't paying attention. I don't know.
Yeah.
But.
Tony Schiavone's in the ring. And Sting and Darby Allin's coming out, so guess what's going to happen?
Yep, that's what I told Riley. I was like, you know what? I bet Taz is going to get on the screen.
Yeah, and like, okay. Huge Sting mark, obviously. Love Darby Allin, love Taz and all of his guys. But when he interrupted, I literally said out loud, can't we just get through one of these interviews? Because it's always the same thing. And I don't want to say it's bad, because it's not bad. It's good delivery, but it's so repetitive. It's almost getting annoying. And even if it's not annoying, it's way too predictable.
Do you know what I think the main problem with this is?
What?
I think they started the feud too early if they're going to plan for a Revolution match.
Yeah.
They should have started the feud, honestly, about now.
Right. Yeah, because Revolution
for March 7th. I mean, they've been doing this since Sting debuted, what, 2 months ago?
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah,
and I think it's taking the wind out of the feud. At this point, I'm just ready for it to be over with. I think Sting cut a really good promo this week.
Yeah, he did. And they didn't let Darby talk.
He just stood there and looked like Darby.
Yeah.
I love the line when Ricky Starks got out. So basically, Taz and Team Taz are outside of the arena because they aren't allowed inside because they beat up a lot of employees last week, which I don't know if you know this, but that's assault. Maybe they should be in jail.
Maybe.
No, they aren't allowed in the arena. So somehow they have a microphone and a cameraman that reaches inside the arena and gets onto the Tron. I don't know. Maybe they got a man on the inside. Maybe Hook's in the video truck or something.
Maybe.
But yeah, so Ricky Starks gets on the mic, and he's always great. And he says,
amazing.
He's so good. And he says that when he looks at Sting, he doesn't seem to see the same Stinger that he saw growing up. He doesn't see the icon anymore. And then the camera like zoomed into Sting's face just closer and closer and ended up on his eyes and said, "You don't see the icon anymore when you look in my eyes? Maybe you need to take a closer look," which I thought was a really cool line.
Right.
But yeah, I thought this did a good job of hyping up the street fight. But again, it's like, it's too much. So it's just way too much. They got a Darby Allin match next week. They need something to, like, I know you want to hype up the match for Revolution. They need to do something to take away from the feud for a week or two.
Right.
They need something else for Sting and Darby to do. They're having Darby versus Janela next week, which I think will be a very good match. They've wrestled in the past, and they're usually very good together. Do you remember the Janela, Darby Allin, Jimmy Havoc trios match they had? That was such a good match. I was just thinking about that the other day. But yeah, I thought this was a good segment, but it's just, I'm exhausted. I really am.
And that's fair. And I don't want to burn it into the ground because, again, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, but it was way too much.
It was better than the Hoodlum promo.
Well, yeah.
By a lot.
Yeah. Britt Baker with Rebel. It's actually listed as Reba here. Versus Thunder Rosa is next. And I actually told my wife, I said, this is great because they're in a good spot on the show.
Yeah. That's like what, the first minutes? Thing I thought. I was like, they've got an actual spot? What?
Yeah. I think AEW really respects both of these women, though.
They should.
And it's nothing against Sheeta because obviously they also, believe in Sheeta. But I think that Sheeta has been... I think her opponents have been lacking.
Yeah. She's faced everyone good, let's be honest.
And these are two gigantic stars.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that putting them on, they expected a draw. Like, and I want to say, and I'm not picking on her, but like Layla Hirsch, right? Layla Hirsch is awesome. But if you are a new wrestling fan or an old wrestling fan and you don't know who Layla Hirsch is, so if you see Women's Champion versus Layla Hirsch, you're like, I know who's going to win this, and then switch over to NXT maybe.
Yeah.
So, and again, I love Layla Hirsch. I'm not being mean to her, but just, she doesn't have the pedigree that Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker does with AEW fans or wrestling fans in general.
Yeah. And it's also really important that they had a big match without the title in the picture. Like, nobody mentioned this being like a number one contenders match or nothing. It was just a feud, and that's really cool that they've done that because I don't know if we've ever seen that. I mean, they had Nyla versus Shanna there for a little while, but that was like a dark feud.
Right.
I can't think of another big feud they've had without the title picture for women.
Right.
But this is like two of their biggest stars. I think Britt Baker is the women's division Jon Moxley. Like, yeah. I think she is she says that she's the face of the women's division. It's just, she's got such a great character. She's come into herself so much. And I thought this was a really good match. If it weren't for the main event, I think it would have been match of the night.
Yeah, it was really, really good. And like, Britt's great, right? But Thunder Rosa is just so awesome.
Yes.
Like, she's so, so good. And like, I think in the past, not within the last few years, but think 2010, 2011, right? You might say, man, Trish and Lita, that was great for a women's match.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you don't say that. You know, Thunder Rosa, she's one of the best workers in AEW, period.
Yeah.
She's insane. Really good. Yeah. And it just shows how long, at least the top tier of women, how far they've come.
Yeah, I will say I thought the beginning of the match was a little slow. But I think when they really got in the groove of it and they started doing like some real like mat wrestling, oh, it got so good.
Yeah.
Got really, really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's great. I think they have great chemistry together too.
Yeah.
I thought the finish was great. I thought that was a great way for, spoiler alert, for Britt Baker to come out on top.
Right. Yeah, there's no way Thunder Rosa was actually knocked out, by the way. So for the fans listening, they have no idea where that came from. Micah messaged me and he's like, she was either knocked out or she's really good at selling. Yeah, she's great. Because like her head didn't even come close to hitting the turnbuckle.
Yeah, Briley said that. I definitely knew she wasn't knocked out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, yeah, there's no way she's knocked out because they would not be like helping her outside the ring with their arms around her. Like if she was actually knocked out, they would have been a little bit more serious about it. But no, I thought it was great having Reba Rebel come in. She took out the turnbuckle pad and basically Thunder Rosa Braun Strowman'd herself into the exposed turnbuckle. And did she do wait, was she running towards the turnbuckle or did Britt throw her into it? Actually, my memory's a little foggy.
I think Britt threw her into it.
Now that I think about it, I think Britt threw her into it.
Yeah, it says Rosa charges, but Baker sends her face first in the exposed turnbuckle.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was really good. And it just like straight up knocked her out. Britt had been trying for the lock job, but Thunder Rosa kept reversing it, kept getting for the ropes. But now that she's knocked out, she got her in the lock jaw. She didn't even flinch. She didn't sell. She was knocked out. It was, that was a really good ending to the match and made Thunder Rosa still look strong in defeat. Which I think AEW's pretty regular about doing the knockout finishes when they want to keep both people strong. Which is fine. It's better than a DQ finish, you know?
Especially when it's a baby face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
I like it.
So Doc Sampson had comes in to check on Thunder Rosa. Britt Baker celebrates shortly, but then her and Rebel leave. And we get a Matt Hardy and Hangman Page promo. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so it was a weird way of presenting it. But you have Hangman, Matt Hardy, and Tony Schiavone backstage in the locker room last week.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a live view. It's them last week. And Matt Hardy is basically trying to sell Hangman Page on a tag team match.
Yeah.
He's saying that, you know, it's terrible what the Chaos Project did to ruin Negative One's birthday. And he just can't believe anybody would do that. And he really thinks that, you know, he and Hangman should join forces for a showdown between the two groups. And Hangman kind of stands up. He's like, whoa, whoa, I'm just using your locker room, man. I've done the group thing. I'm good. And Matt Hardy, and he actually told Matt Hardy, he's like, I'm not interested in signing one of your carny contracts. I'm not looking to join any groups. I'm good.
Right.
But Hardy kind of settled him down. He's like, you look, we're just some good Carolina boys. And I just think we really need to defend Negative One. And so Adam Page is like, you know, all right, that's fine. One match. We'll do one match. And so we cut back into commentary. And they're saying, okay, and he said, we'll do one match next week, but we cut into commentary and like, okay, next week is now, here's the match. It was a real weird way to present it.
I actually didn't know that was from the previous week. I don't know how it came off on television.
Yeah, on television, it was weird. Yeah, like, he kept saying next week. Tony Schiavone is still at commentary, but he's so obviously like a pre-recorded segment.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was a weird way to present it. I think maybe it was designed to actually happen next week, but they just slated it for this card instead. But yeah, it was weird, but it's fine. They fixed it. It's a nitpick. But yeah, so this is like a glorified squash match, right? But yeah. I mean, it was a pretty good match.
It was. Luther's really finding a way to work his style, and it's actually really great pairing him with Serpentico.
Yeah.
Because Luther doesn't have to do anything. Serpentico does all the work, and Luther like body slams Serpentico into his opponents, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, it is a good pairing, and he probably did better in this match than I've seen in a lot.
Yeah.
Obviously, I like the red gear too. Yeah, his gear's pretty cool. Obviously, like, he's not gonna do any barn burners or anything, but
yeah.
This was a perfectly fine match. It did what it meant to do. I thought the booking decision on the end was weird. Thought it was a real weird decision with the story they're trying to sell us.
Like, I also did, but Matt Hardy's pulled one over on Private Party where he did it literally right now.
But and yeah, but if you're trying to like recruit somebody, you don't want to spit in their face by taking their pin.
Yeah.
Which I guess we should mention, Adam Page hit Serpentico with the Buckshot Lariat. Matt Hardy tagged himself in and stole the pin. We've seen this before. I think it was with the Young Bucks, maybe.
Yeah.
One of their matches happened to Adam Page. So maybe they're trying to harken back to that to give him further PTSD. Poor, poor Adam Page. But yeah, it was a weird. It was a weird booking decision because he's like, I don't know, he's trying to win Adam Page over. He's trying to present himself as not a carny, just a guy who wants to look out for him. But instead, he stole the pin. Adam Page looked bumfuzzled after the match, and he just kind of looks over at Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy's like, yeah, man, we won, we won. And Adam Page is like, okay, I guess, and raised Matt Hardy's hand. It's weird, but yeah, I'm curious to see where they go with Adam Page after this, because I feel like this was probably it. Like, we may see one more promo between them, but I mean, no way he does anything with them now, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, logically, you'd think not, but he's very lonely.
Yeah, but if he's going to be lonely, he needs to just join the Dark Order.
Well, maybe. He has to move on, though. Anna Jay told him to move on BTE this week.
It's true.
Yeah.
She just straight up, like, mom voiced him.
She sure did.
She's like, go on, get.
So, the 16-women tournament is going, for the women's tournament, is going to take place in the United States and in Japan.
Yeah.
So this is super cool. And I think we kind of expected that with the U.S. flag on one side and the Japanese flag on the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So on the Japanese side, I'm going to name the girls that have, as far as I know, have wrestled in AEW. Forgive me if I'm missing someone. Obviously, we know Aja Kong, the wrestling legend. Yuka Sakazaki, the magical girl. She's awesome. And Amy Sakura, which is, Kyle don't like her because the Freddie Mercury stuff. She's a great wrestler.
She's good. She's a great wrestler, but her interest is terrible.
Her interest, she has the worst interest music in AEW. That's correct. They're also getting in, forgive me, I don't know women's, Japanese women's wrestling. So, Veni, Ryo Mizunami, Mei Soruga, Rin Kadokura, and Maki Ito, who I do know. And on the U.S. side, I feel like we'll know all of these names. We've got Serena Deeb, Riho, who is Japanese, but apparently she's going to be entering the United States side, and she will be wrestling here in Jacksonville, so that's exciting.
I believe she moved to America. Like,
yeah, that's what Cheetah did.
Yeah, I think she like moved to America so she can get back into AEW programming, which is pretty cool.
Great. Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, Ty Conti, Nyla Rose, Layla Hirsch, Anna Jay, and Thunder Rosa. That's a pretty good side. And I'll tell you, that Japanese side's really good too. Like, it really is. These girls are well known. It's just they're not really well known to American viewers.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I hope they don't do it on YouTube. That'll be such a slap in the face again. But there's like a lot of matches that need to happen, and they only have 2 months.
Right.
So 2 months is 8 weeks of programming, 7 weeks of programming now. Yeah. And they have what, like 16, eight matches? They have eight matches to go through?
Well, at least.
No.
If you get 16, you've got four that can happen in one night technically, but they never will. Then you have two matches, then you're winner.
Yeah, that's gonna be tough. Maybe they do it on a couple episodes on Dark or something. I don't know. Yeah. Would be really good for them to have that second show right about now.
Right.
But yeah, I'm super stoked for this. I think it's going to be really good. Interesting that Big Swole nor Penelope Ford are involved.
Yeah.
Two of the bigger names in AEW. I know they're trying to push Layla Hirsch, but it's a little weird. Right. Riley mentioned to me, he's like, I guess they're just done with Penelope now. I was like, well, not really, but I mean, she's faced everybody.
Yeah.
And so has Big Swole. And honestly, I'm fine with Big Swole not being in it because I think she still needs work in the ring.
Yeah.
And Penelope Ford a little bit. Right. Not as much so. But, yeah, speaking of Penelope Ford, we got the next big seven. Why don't you tell us about that? How'd that come off in person?
That is after Jericho and MJF.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Jericho and MJF are backstage, and they are walking, and they're like, yes, we're going to be future world tag team champs. And they go into the Inner Circle locker room, And Jericho's like, yeah, we did it. And everyone else, of course, looks pissed. And Sammy's like, did we? Did we do it, Chris? And Chris said, yeah, man. When any of us win, we all win. And Sammy says, well, that's really funny because it seems like you're the one that always wins. And honestly, it seems like the rest of us are collateral damage, which is what Jericho said earlier to Sammy when Sammy complained about being eliminated by Jericho. Mm. So Sammy walks out. Jericho kind of looks around as everyone stares at him. And he follows Sammy out, calling him. And then MJF says, guys, I think it's time we had a little talk. But Wardlow, will you take care of that? And Wardlow pushes the cameraman out and closes the door. So here it is. Yeah. We've officially arrived at Jericho being usurped in the Inner Circle.
Yeah, I think that's what this is going to be leading to.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably lead to MJF and Jericho breaking up at Revolution after a loss, if I had a guess.
Yeah. Jericho or will probably want to take the pin, too.
It could even be the Inner Circle turning on Jericho at Revolution. That would be a big moment for a pay-per-view.
Yeah. It's true. It's hard, right? Because this is one of those things where you want it to happen. It makes logical sense. It's good for the story. But at the same time, you really don't want it to happen. The Inner Circle's been around since AEW was founded, pretty much. And it's just, it's such a huge part. They're so entertaining. It's so good. But there comes a time where you have to move on. And it sucks, but I think it's kind of time, right?
Yeah. I think it's probably, honestly, time for Jericho to go face.
Yeah.
I think a face Jericho would be great. And I think he'll probably have another group with him because I feel like at the spot in his career, he's not the one to be doing all the work all the time. So I think it's great to have him involved with other things. But yeah, I don't know how they turn him face because he's been a heel for all of AEW's existence and he's so good at it. But
he's kind of a face now, though, if you really think about it.
Yeah, he's not super heelish, but, I mean, they haven't, like, broken anybody's, like, legs. They haven't broken anybody's legs in a while. It's been since Orange Cassidy. That's when they attacked Orange Cassidy with the, so I think they may turn him face, have MJF obviously stay heel for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
He should be. Yeah, this was a very interesting segment. I liked it.
I know this isn't what we're talking about, but when MJF turns face, he's going to be so amazing. He's going to be Roddy Piper.
I don't know if he ever will turn face. I think he might be a career heel. I don't know.
No. He'll be amazing at it, too.
Maybe.
Mm. The wedding comes next. And before we say anything, I do want to notate that unless we're being worked, Kip Sabian said, and he wasn't playing his character, at least he didn't seem to be, he said, yes, tonight we are really getting married. We wanted to have a big to-do with friends and family, but because of COVID, we weren't able to, and we wanted to go ahead and get married, so we're doing it on the show.
So, I think that's entirely likely. Yeah. Honestly, I'm not sure that Tony Khan would have okayed a wedding angle.
Or one this that would take up this much time.
Yeah, especially on a big show like this, unless it was literally their wedding.
Yeah.
Because Tony Khan's the kind of person that... he's a really, really nice guy. And I think as he goes along, like from listening to him, he's probably learning to be a little bit more stern.
Yeah.
But I mean, if Kip Sabian said, hey man, we want to get married on Dynamite. Right. Tony Khan's gonna be like, absolutely. Of course. Let's do it on Beach Break. We'll give you 20 minutes of the show. That's fine. Let's do it. But I'm not sure that he would have booked a wedding angle had this not been the case.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So
we got a wedding angle. Here it is.
So the preacher comes out, and I cannot see his eyebrows. And I still, I exclaim out loud.
You can miss his eyebrows.
Yeah, out loud. That's James Mitchell. And James Mitchell, Father James Mitchell, by the way, comes out, and he is the minister, the sinister minister.
The sinister minister.
Yeah. For this show, and I forgot to mention before, for this wedding, before he comes out, Kip, Miro, and Chuck are backstage. They're getting interviewed. Vicky comes up and talks to them. Nothing really happens. It doesn't matter.
Vicky walks Kip out.
Yeah. Vicky walks Kip out. Miro, of course, is with him. Penelope Ford comes out with Jerry Lynn, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was Jerry Lynn.
Yeah. Nicest guy in wrestling. And they have vows, and they're clearly kayfabe vows, right? Speaking of kayfabe, James Mitchell has a line that says, they'll kayfabe everyone else as long as they both shall live, or something like that. It was very entertaining.
The traditional line is forsaking all others.
Yeah.
And I think he said kayfabing all others.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really good. This was very in character, though. Even though they were supposedly very much getting married, they were absolutely in character.
Yeah. Kip Sabian had a toothpick. I don't know if you could see that from where you were, but he had a toothpick in his mouth, which is one of his things.
Penelope Ford's lipstick was so bright, I could see it from up in the friggin' rafters.
Yeah, and it was all over Kip Sabian before it was over with.
So they get married. Sinister Minister has some jokes. They're good. Kip Sabian has some, he does vows. Penelope does vows and says that he has the biggest before Kip Sabian cuts her off. I'm not sure why he would do that, but hey.
Yeah, Riley was like, the biggest what?
The biggest
what?
The biggest heart, Micah. Yeah, come on.
Okay.
Miro gives his toast and says, you know, there's a giant present in the corner, and I want to be clear, I've been to a couple weddings before. Everybody kind of laughs.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But before we get to that, though.
Okay, what'd I miss?
So, can we talk about the fact that, number one, AEW has completely just... So, the bachelor party didn't happen, right?
It did not. That's correct.
Okay.
And Miro did say...
Yeah, so Miro said what he said, right? Yeah. But right before this segment... Excalibur said on commentary, Miro threw a great bachelor party for Kip Sabian last night. It was just a real, like, huge, hectic party. And then Miro said, I know this hasn't been exactly like he wanted or whatever. I didn't throw a bachelor party. I didn't blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hold on a minute. Did you throw a bachelor party or not? First of all, the fact that they got it backwards is kind of aggravating. But the fact that they just completely ditched the bachelor party, which was the whole thing about bringing him in, they had the other Mitchell, Bruce Mitchell, come in and just never did anything with it.
Yeah.
That's super WWE, and we would definitely be trashing them for it right now. So I'm trashing AEW for it. You can't just expect us to forget about things. Like,
I forgot about it.
I don't forget things. it's frustrating to me because that was like the whole thing about Miro's character was he was coming in to throw this great bachelor party. They had weeks of vignettes about it, and then nothing. So
that is fair.
That's where I'm at. But please go ahead because I thought what happened afterwards was good.
Yeah. So Miro says, I've been in a couple weddings before, and I see this present is addressed to you, Chuck. And he just destroys the present and tosses it out of the ring.
It was like a man-sized present.
Yes.
It was empty.
Yells at Chuck to go get, you know, go clean it up because he's the butler. And we'll tell you during the commercial break, while they were setting all this stuff up, they brought out a table with a black cloth all over it. And, like, they were just moving it around. And eventually, they took the table out. And we're like, where'd the table go? Oh, that's because someone came out in the table. And we'll get to that in a second. That's how I got there, yeah. So Miro turns around after Chuck's outside cleaning up the present. And he goes, what is love? And the entire crowd goes, baby, don't hurt me. And they sing. And then Miro's like, wonderful. So he says it like two more times and the crowd's singing with him. It was a great moment.
Honestly, this is why Rusev was such a big deal.
Right.
Because it's not because of his in-ring work. It's not because of his technical wrestling. It's because of how good he is at connecting with the crowd.
Right.
And this was a great example of that, I think.
Yeah.
And then going straight back into heel mode.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Yeah, he connects with the crowd, and then he goes, shut up, this is my wedding. I'm going to keep saying, you guys don't say anything else. It was great.
Yeah.
So, it turns out that Miro has been handcuffed. His legs have been handcuffed. He can't move. Chuck gets in. He attacks Kip Sabian, shoves him into Penelope, who gets her face all in the cake. He beats up Kip Sabian a little bit. Penelope jumps on his back. So Kip can get the upper hand. And then who comes out of the cake but Orange Cassidy?
Yeah, I was like, well, somebody's coming out of the cake.
Yeah,
for
people
sure.
People were like, it's Trent. And I'm like, it's definitely not Trent. He absolutely tore his pec. He is not back already. So Orange Cassidy got, he came out in this, we couldn't see him, man. We couldn't see him. Totally covered in this black table. And he somehow climbed into that cake without anybody noticing.
Yeah, that is weird how they accomplished that. Was there a hole in the ring?
No. No, they brought out a big table and like they were moving around the little presents and stuff. And like, I think it was almost like magic, like misdirection.
Yeah, maybe so. They're like, who looked at the presents?
Yeah, he climbed in when people weren't paying attention. So it's really funny.
Or maybe he's like Drax and he moved so incredibly slow, you didn't see him.
Maybe. That makes sense.
He's mastered the art of invisibility.
Yeah. So of course, Orange Cassidy helps Chuck. They beat up Kip Sabian. They yell at Miro. At some point, Sabian did accidentally hit Miro. Miro was not damaged, but also not happy.
Yeah.
So they're teasing that breakup already, which is fine. I mean, we knew this wasn't going to last forever.
Yeah, I think it probably needs to happen.
Yeah. So that was, it was a fine set. It lasted way too long, but these two people were actually getting married. So as far as I know, this is the first actual wedding we've ever seen on television. So it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. But do we go straight into Archer and Kingston after that, or am I missing anything?
We actually had a Shaq promo.
Oh, that's right. They cut to earlier in the day.
Yeah, what on TNT. What did you think of that, actually?
Honestly, like, I didn't think it was bad. I think Shaq's just a naturally funny guy.
I think Shaq's just cool, right? He's just entertaining.
He's just funny. Like, his deadpan delivery is just, it's so good. And when they're like, oh, Shaq, what's your finisher going to be? And he's like, it's going to be the Black Tornado. And they're like, okay, show us. You have to show us. And then you know what he's thinking. He's like, I don't have anything. So he's like, he gets up. He's like, all right, so first off, what I'm going to do is like, I don't want to hit you, so step back. And he just does a Judas effect. I'm like, okay, perfect. Great. Wonderful. Yeah, and they did announce the match is not going to be at Revolution.
Yeah.
It is going to be on the Wednesday night previous, I believe.
Which is weird, but I think it's because Revolution is going to be going against the NBA All-Star game.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and either A, Shaq's going to be part of that, or B, they don't want to take a big basketball name going up against the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So,
smart decision. Also, yeah. I think it's better that it's not on pay-per-view because I don't want one of the Revolution spots taken up by Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill. I mean, let's be honest. I want to watch actual wrestling. So I think it's a great match for TV. And honestly, I think it's a better idea for TV because Shaq is going to pop the ratings for sure. Right. If you tell anybody who knows Shaquille O'Neal is like, hey, Shaq's going to wrestle on TNT this Wednesday night, they're going to be like, okay, I have to see that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a better idea to put it on TV because I don't think anybody's going to buy a $50 pay-per-view to see Shaq wrestle, but they definitely will watch TNT on Wednesday night.
That is fair. That's a good point.
So
hardcore people don't care, and those are the ones that are buying your pay-per-views, but casual fans will absolutely go, sure, I'll watch wrestling for a couple hours. I haven't watched wrestling in a long time, and Shaq's going to be on there. Cool.
Yeah. And then they can stack the rest of the card.
Yeah.
Some people coming back.
Yeah, I get it. Lance Archer and Eddie Kingston. I really want to know how this came off on TV, because if I'm being completely honest, I did not like this match live, and everyone I've seen online, like, it was so great. I'm like, all right.
I didn't really like it.
Okay, good. It's not just me then.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a very good match.
I was excited for this, actually.
Yeah, so we had Eddie Kingston versus Lance Archer last week, which obviously didn't get seen by a lot of people because I think the TNT app had some issues. So they did a rematch this week. Obviously, Kingston won with a dirty heel tactic last week. So this week, they're going to do a lumberjack match. But, like, there wasn't enough people there to be lumberjacks.
Right.
But second of all, like, they didn't even have, like, and I hate to say this, they didn't have, like, any big names out there. Like, it was, like, Bear Country, which are great, and I'm glad to see them on TV. But, like, they got involved in the match, and if you're watching TNT and Dynamite every week, you're like, who are these people?
Right.
Right? And you had, you know, like, Billy Gunn and the Guns and all that out there. And you had, like, Cesar Bononi on the other side. I don't know who that is. I know he's wrestled on Dark a few times, and I think he's wrestling on Dynamite next week. I don't know who he is. I'm like, who is this tall Italian dude?
Right.
And they had TH2, The Butcher and the Blade. It was
Gun Club.
Gun Club. Jake Roberts got involved at one point, which is probably the high spot of the match. Yeah,
he punched someone and fell over.
Yeah, it was great. And then he was like on his back laughing. It's like, oh, I'm old. yeah, I didn't think the match was super good. I didn't think it stood up to an actual lumberjack match because the heels were just destroying Archer as he got thrown out. And then Kingston would get thrown on the face side and they'd be like, okay, buddy, get back in the ring. I don't know. I didn't think it was a super great match. I thought last week was much better. But yeah, we saw the Bunny get involved. We saw tables getting set up. Blade got put through a table by, I think,
one of the Bear Country
Bronson
guys.
Is his name. Yeah, is that Bronson it. Reed?
Definitely not, no.
Because he's got the same name, and he looks like Bronson Reed.
Bronson Reed's still very much in NXT.
Okay, because I was watching, and I was like, did something happen that I don't know about? Because this is a big bearded man named Bronson on my TV. I'm confused. One of them needs to change their name. But yeah, Blade got put through a table. Not a whole lot really happened.
Yeah, that was the thing. They just kept tossing each other outside the ring. And it was like, people liked it because it was a giant cluster. And you just don't see giant clusters all that much anymore.
Yeah, I think we see them too often.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would have been better if it was just a no DQ. Like, honestly, I think they would have put on a very good street fight. But it was what it is. And Archer won with the blackout.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
50-50 booking.
Right, but it's not how they do it all the time, so.
It's the right way to do it.
Yeah. In this situation, I agree.
Yeah.
So.
But anyways.
Yeah. Then up next, we have FTR. FTR was not in the tag team turmoil battle royal, whatever it's called. They were suspended for the week and were not allowed to be in the match because of what they did to Luchasaurus cutting his mask last week. They cut Tully Blanchard. And they're all good, right? My gosh. Tully Blanchard.
It's a shame he was gone from wrestling for so long.
I know. He's so good. He cuts a stellar promo, putting over his guys. And Dax Harwood, who I think him and Cash are both great, but I think Dax is a little better at promos. And if he's not, he definitely takes the lead more often.
Yeah.
And he goes, look, Jack, which is Jungle Boy's real name, and no one else calls him that except JR. He says, look, Jack, I want to be clear that we're not bad men. But sometimes we do think, what would bad men do? And they pull a chair over, and it's Marco Stunt, who's handcuffed to the chair, and he's got tape over his mouth. So they have kidnapped Marco Stunt, which I don't think will happen, but I think it would be hilarious if, like, next week he was still kidnapped.
So the whole thing about this segment is, they're like, did you go and tattle on us?
Yes.
Jack, and my wife pointed out, she's like, they were on TV.
Right.
Everybody saw it. They were in the middle of the ring. They didn't go tattle on them. It was in public. And then now they've committed a crime. They've kidnapped a child.
That's true.
I mean, we're going to see Marco's face in the back of milk bottles for the next week until he's returned safely to his Jurassic family.
The problem with this is I remember as a child, the NWO captured Miss Elizabeth, right? And like they kept her for like a week or two. And I remember thinking, that's very illegal. Like if they kidnap someone, the police would be all over them.
Yeah. It's like, oh, now I know wrestling's not real. Yeah.
As a child, I thought that. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's funny. I think it was a funny visual, but. You got to suspend your disbelief, I guess, every once in a while.
Right.
It is a crime, though. Don't do it, kids.
Absolutely a crime.
Yeah.
Main event time. No. Joey Janela. Joey Janela cuts a promo, and it's the best promo I've ever heard him cut. Now, was it great? No. But Joey
Janela. Not a high bar.
I'm not a fan of Joey Janela, and I want to be clear, he's a great guy, and he does awesome stuff for indie wrestling, okay? Great stuff. He's just not my cup of tea. So again, nothing personal against Joey Janela, like Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman that I legitimately don't like. But nothing personal against Joey. He's just not my cup of tea, okay?
Lars Sullivan, who was released from WWE this week.
Right. And strangely, had good things to say. It was weird. So Joey Janela cuts a promo and says, "Hey, Darby, you know, we've beat each other up for a long time, but this is the biggest stakes ever. It's for the TNT Championship." And it was good. It was a good promo. Was it great? No, but it was fine. It did the job. It sold the match. It told us that we had history together other than the two or three matches that, you know, they've had in AEW. I thought it really did a good job. And was it five-star promo? No, but it didn't need to be. It did the job, and I liked it.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. It's definitely his best promo. It was really good. They put it there. I don't think Joey Janela's done anything to deserve a title shot. I mean, they have a ranking system.
He won a match on Dark that you guys will be able to see on Tuesday.
It's kind of weird that they threw him in the match, but it'll be a good match. I really think it will.
Yeah.
So
the cool thing about the TNT title is there's technically no ranking systems. Like, there's a top five men, right? Yeah. And they usually either do a tournament or battle royal or something, tag teams as well, in the women's title, really. Or they just pick the top guy, right?
Yeah.
Well, and TNT, they can do whatever they want to in the TNT title. They can just be like,
yeah, Cody did the open challenge and face people who weren't even signed. So
yeah, so be like Darby Allin versus Joey. That should be fun. And just do it. So I don't mind them having a title like that. I wouldn't want every title to be like that, kind of like all of WWE's belts. But having a title like that is kind of fun.
Yeah, I agree. There will for sure be a day, I think, when an unsigned talent wins the TNT title and they announce that they're signed because of that.
I hope so. I think
that would be a very good angle to pull one day with a TNT title.
Yeah. It's main event time.
Let's do it.
And the Good Brothers and Kenny Omega come out to what I have been told is Bullet Club music. I cannot confirm that
I think so. The guy that does AEW's music tweeted out that he was working on Bullet Club music.
Yeah.
Right? So I guess a theme song for the group. This theme song, in my opinion, was terrible.
I didn't really care for it.
I thought it was super generic, like SmackDown versus Raw, rock music number 3 music. Yeah. It said like Good Brothers a couple times. I think there were some machine guns in there. Yeah. I didn't like it at all.
It also was really weird for Kenny because like Kenny's music is so upbeat and he came out and he did his pose. Yeah. It just didn't really seem to fit. But they're bad guys and they're supposed to be cool bad guys, so fine. I didn't hate it, but I pretty much hated it.
I mean, like, come on. If you're going to have a big group like this, you got to have, like, some NWO-level music.
Yeah.
That was a big part of it, man. Even though they're heels, they got to have good music.
Yeah. Agreed. Don Callis is out there with these guys, with the Good Brothers and Kenny Omega. And Custom Promo, which I believe happened during the commercial break.
It did, because I was watching on Fight TV. Don Callis comes out, says one word, and it goes boo doo 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 doo, which is what it does every commercial break that they don't want televised. So yeah, we saw him start talking, and they took it away from us.
Remember when Fight TV never cut off?
Yeah, that was great.
Fun days.
Yeah, they caught on to us.
Yeah, Moxley, Pac, and Phoenix come out afterwards. They all come through the crowd. It was really cool. We can talk about this match if you want to, but can we just say it was freaking great?
It was such a good match.
It was so good.
I don't know if I can talk about this match. There was so much
going on. Kenny Omega at the very beginning. Let me tell you how good this guy is. Anytime Jon Moxley got remotely close to his side of the ring, he absolutely ran away.
Yes.
100%. He would jump off the ring and turn around, hold his hands up. When his teammates brought him over, brought Mox over to his corner, he would move over to the side and hold his hands up. He is terrified of this guy.
Yes. It is such good character work.
Yeah.
Like, to start out the match, Moxley was in the ring and he was like pointing at Omega because he wanted Omega. And yeah. Omega like started to go in the ring, but then he was like, no, I'll let, I think it's Carl Anderson open up the match.
Yeah.
And he like lifted his hands up. It's so good.
We had double moonsaults with Pac and Phoenix onto the Good Brothers. There was one spot where Kenny was pinning Mox after Mox was already hurt, so he decided to get in the ring. And Pac saved it with a 450 splash.
It's ridiculous. The timing he had to have to time it perfectly on the 2.5.
Yeah.
I was generally concerned that he was going to do it a little too late.
Yeah, me too. There was a spot where Kenny Omega was inside the ring. Phoenix climbs at the top, does a moonsault, lands on his feet, rolls backwards, and then does a diamond cutter onto Kenny. Like, it was just so good. This whole thing was so good.
This is probably, I mean, the Good Brothers are great. I like their ring work. I don't like their characters, but I like their ring work. But these are four of the best wrestlers of our generation in one match.
Yeah.
Like, no lie. The Good Brothers are great. Not taking anything away from them. But Phoenix is the best high flyer of our time.
Yeah.
Probably all time. Let's be honest. Like, Rey Mysterio is great.
Yeah.
But he's like one of those baseball players that is like considered one of the greatest of all times. But when you put their stats against the guys today that learned from him, like, it's amazing how things multiply over the years. And I think Phoenix is the amalgamation of that.
Yeah.
And then you have Pac, which is like the best athlete in wrestling.
Right.
You have Jon Moxley, which is one of the biggest names in wrestling.
Yeah.
And you have Kenny Omega, which I think is probably the best wrestler, like, overall wrestling right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy that you had all these guys in one match. It's totally stacked.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. And it was cool because it was on a special show. And six-man tags, like, you could run any of these back in one-on-ones or tag matches with the Good Brothers, and it's still going to be intriguing.
Yeah.
So
I would love to see, whenever Pentagon gets back, I'm sure we'll see Good Brothers versus the Lucha Brothers.
I hope so.
Brothers versus Brothers. It'll be great.
Freaking amazing. The match ended. Oh, there was one spot that I forgot about where Kenny Omega did a Snapdragon suplex, like, off of the middle rope, like, on the side. It was just so cool. There's so many cool spots in this.
Yeah, it was. There's too much.
Yeah.
Kenny hit Moxley with a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Before that 450 interruption.
Yeah. Phoenix got pinned. He took the Magic Killer, and Omega V-triggered Pac outside of the ring. Mox was already out. And I believe it was Gallows pinned Phoenix. They continue to beat up. The heels continue to beat up on the baby faces. Lance Archer comes out and makes the save. I don't know why, but you know what? Who cares? We're getting Lance Archer versus...
Because Lance Archer likes to fight.
Yeah, that's
kind of... He just came out and laid out Luke Gallows, which I think will be a great match that they, I'm sure, will have before too long.
Yeah. And then, of course, he tossed out... He destroyed Carl Anderson, and then him and Luke Gallows fought. And it's so funny to watch wrestling live, especially in dailies, because, like, they sell it until they're hidden, right? So they're fighting and they're off camera. They're behind all the wrestlers that are in the first two rows. And they're probably, like, you've seen the Beach Break set, right? You've been in a place.
Yeah.
So, like, over behind where the commentators are, there are stairs, which is where we went up on our very first show. We were there.
Yeah.
Like once they got over there, like, Lance was just holding on to Luke's head. And, like, they were just climbing, like they were climbing stairs at a WWE match before. They're just going to talk. But, like, they climb the stairs, they go around the corner, and, like, he did that for, like, 30 seconds. Just wouldn't let go. And it was so funny. It's like he was in a video game trying to take him to the next area.
Yeah, just trying to, like, Irish whip him to the backstage area so you can get a ladder.
Yeah.
And
that's
great.
That's great. But what really matters is Mox is in the ring with Kenny. And he is about to take him out. And then he gets destroyed by a very small man. But this isn't just any very small man. This is New Japan's Kenta. Or if you know him from WWE, Hideo Itami. Don't worry, he's way better than what he was shown there.
Kenta's a big deal. He was a great wrestler then. He just was booked as a jobber.
Exactly. Kenta's amazing. He's been amazing for 15 years. He is the number one contender for Mox's IWGP US Championship. He's been holding that briefcase and defending it as the champion for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And New Japan did not want to strip Mox of the title because Mox, one, is a big deal. And two, because it's just kind of lame to strip titles, and New Japan has done it a couple times recently. So I don't know if we're going to get the actual title match on AEW television. I don't think we will. I think New Japan wants it unless they strike a deal and go, hey, if you want, you know, the title back on your guy, we can have Kenta beat Mox on AEW television. Then you guys can have Mox feud with someone else. So I don't know, but we'll see.
Either way, New Japan could have a Kenta versus Moxley match now because they're both in America.
Right.
The whole issue was Moxley couldn't go to Japan because of the quarantine you have to face. Number one, his wife is pregnant, so he's not going to Japan right now during COVID, for sure. I think it's likely that Kenta will beat Moxley, take the belt off of him until, you know, Renee has her baby and they've, you know, he takes his time off to enjoy that, you know?
Yeah.
And then he'll probably come back and then feud with Kenta again. But even if they had to film it on AEW set and air it, maybe they could do a simulcast or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's for sure what's going to happen. But I am super stoked to see the Forbidden Door getting knocked down, because not only did Kenta come out, he came out in a Bullet Club shirt.
Sure did.
And I've been saying, you know, they've been saying the name Bullet Club. So obviously I thought something was going to happen, but I was still surprised whenever he came out. This means so many more options for AEW. It's amazing seeing how all of wrestling has basically come together to defeat the Thanos that is Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
You've got NWA, Impact Wrestling, AEW, New Japan, all of the indies, really. It's great to see everybody working together again, which is something we've never seen.
Right.
Yeah, and it's something we've never seen in American wrestling. They do it in Japan between different promotions, but we've never seen that here, even with WCW. I mean, they may have had like the odd like luchadors come in from AAA or something, but they never had, I guess there wasn't that many available options back then either.
The WCW did have some partnerships with New Japan back in the day. There was even a big NWO Japan, but they didn't do a lot of stuff with other American promotions. As a matter of fact, the ones that did it was WWF, who for I think 2 weeks did some stuff with ECW, and then they sent Mick Foley out there.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm super excited about this. I cannot wait for Kota Ibushi to interrupt Omega.
Yes.
It's got to happen. What do you think the odds are that we get Kota Ibushi versus Omega at Revolution? Because we still don't know who he's going to face at Revolution.
He's wrestling Mox at Revolution, 100%.
You think so? Yeah. I'm curious. I'm curious if they're going to keep Mox away from him for a little while. But I thought maybe they'd even swerve and do Pac. I think Kota Ibushi would be huge, though. Maybe not as huge for American viewers, but for the storyline of Kenny Omega and everything he's done, I think that would be a big deal.
So let's talk about the Forbidden Door real quick. Mm-hmm. So AEW has partnered with NWA,
mm-hmm.
which brought them Thunder Rosa.
Yep.
They partnered with Impact, which brought them the Good Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they've partnered with New Japan now, which brought them Kenta.
Yes.
What I'm not seeing is a full-on wide-open door with any of the companies. None of them.
Yeah, like so, we haven't seen like Nick Aldis or anything come in.
Yeah. So like when they were first announced Impact, I'm like, holy crap, are we going to see the Motor City Machine Guns on Dynamite next week? I absolutely want to see Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley versus the Young Bucks.
But I think we will see that.
Yeah.
Chris Sabin can't wrestle at all right now.
Yeah. No, it was Alex Shelley was injured, right?
Neither one of them are injured. The one that's a nurse, is it Alex Shelley or Chris Sabin?
Alex Shelley, yeah.
Okay. Alex Shelley is not cleared to wrestle by Impact.
Because he works with COVID patients.
Because he works with COVID patients, so they don't think it's safe for him, and he's agreed that, you know, it's not safe for him to keep coming in. He's working like specifically with COVID patients, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is smart. I don't think he should be, you know, spreading that around.
Right.
So I think we will definitely get the Young Bucks versus the Motor City Machine Gun. It could be that they don't want to get too many people involved at one time. They have their own rosters to care about.
Yeah.
But I think there's a good chance we'll eventually get Nick Aldis versus Cody.
Yeah, because that was really good at All In.
Yeah, I think they're a great feud. I think there's a good chance we get Motor City Machine Gun versus Young Bucks. And I think there's a good chance we get a Bullet Club versus Bullet Club.
Yeah.
Coming. But it's really difficult working with the New Japan, especially because there's the quarantine going there and coming back. It's a big weight. I think they have to quarantine 10 days when they get here and then 10 days when they get to Japan. Maybe it's just 10 days when they get to Japan, like when they get back. I'm sure Florida doesn't care. They just get there and they're like, okay, do you have COVID? All right, well, you're good.
Yeah.
But I know in Japan you have to quarantine for, I think, at least 10 days.
Okay.
When you get there. So, yeah, I think we'll definitely see more as it progresses, but it does seem a little lackluster so far. But again, they have their own roster to worry about, and AEW's roster is a little bit bloated. I mean, if we're being honest, they have a lot of people to worry about with 2 hours of TV a week.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair.
Well, 4 hours if you count Dark.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand. I totally get it. Yeah, they do have
And we are seeing Private Party on Impact. They got a number one contenders match.
Yeah. NWA isn't really a thing at the moment, so... You know, I mean,
yeah, what is Nick Aldis doing?
Shows. So they are, NWA is doing some weekly shows. Matter of fact, Jordan Cruz, our very own Indie Focus guest, was on NWA just like a month or two ago.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I'm not really watching a lot of it. I watched him wrestle Mike Kanellis on an NWA show because I had it on like his background noise while I was doing something else. And it's actually a good... It's a good show, and you guys heard me talk about Impact. Like, I wasn't really impressed with Impact. I actually really liked NWA. It was a lot of fun.
I liked Power when they were running Power. I thought it was a really good throwback show.
Yeah. So, but the reality is, like, I understand what you're saying. They do have to push their own guys, but it is kind of a big deal to be able to break down that door.
Yeah, I would say the only thing they're missing is Ring of Honor, but at this point, what are we really missing?
Well, Marty, but...
Nope, he's not signed with the Ring of Honor anymore.
Yeah, and after all that stuff that happened, like, it's hard. So.
It's going to be a long time for anybody who touches Marty Scurll in wrestling. Like, it's going to be a while. He's going to have to show some rehabilitation, which is crazy because he had one of the biggest contracts of anyone in wrestling. Crazy.
Yeah.
But I think this is leading some really good things, hopefully.
Yeah. Grade this show for me.
Honestly, I think I'd give the show an A. It probably would have got an A+ if it weren't for the wedding.
Really?
I just really liked it.
Kyle's not on this show, and he messaged us before we started and said, hey, I can't be on here tonight, but I wouldn't have anything good to say anyway because I didn't like it. And I love the show, but I always love the show, right? Like, whenever I'm on the show, I'm like, yeah, it was great. So I didn't know if maybe you also didn't like it, but I'm glad to hear you did.
It's not so much that the whole card was so good. The main event was so good. If the main event would have been okay, it probably got an A-, but the main event was so good.
And the women's match was great.
The women's match was really good.
Yep. I'm a sucker for battle royals, and I think that one was easy to follow and well-planned. Sure, there were some issues, but I liked it.
I just enjoyed the show. Looking at everything and nitpicking it, it may seem like I don't, but I did enjoy it. I liked it. Okay. It's also worth mentioning that on social media, after the show, Kenny Omega approached Kenta and was like, hey, man, yeah, Bullet Club for life. You need a little thing. And Kenta said, F you, man. I didn't come here for you. I came here for Moxley, and walked off. And then Kenny cuts a promo on the camera and sets up a match for next week, Moxley and Lance Archer versus Kenny and Kenta.
Yes.
That's going to be a great match.
Yes. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah. What would you grade the show?
Well, I really liked the show. I thought it was really good. I hate to say it because I love both guys, but I just didn't like Archer and Kingston.
It wasn't that great.
It
wasn't a very long match either. It didn't take a lot of time.
Yeah, no, it didn't. I really liked the rest of the show, and like, I really like the fact that the girls got a good spot.
And they did well with it.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, if it was a crap match, I'd be like, well, that shouldn't have been on there. Like, for example, we talked about Swole and Britt Baker, how Tony Khan was kind of bullied to put them on the main show because they didn't want the girls to be an afterthought. But it's not the girls are an afterthought, it's that the match is, and that match wasn't good. If this match would have been right before the main event, that would have been a huge mistake, because this match was frigging awesome. So it was at a perfect spot on the card, and I would like to see more important women's matches and important women's feuds, but I really liked it. I thought it was great. I thought the whole show was good. I didn't like it as much as you did, but the main events was out of this world amazing. A minus for me. I enjoyed it, but I always enjoy it, so whatever.
Yeah.
I'm super biased.
The main event was just so good.
It was great. And Kenta was there.
Yeah.
So, super cool. Well, ladies and gents, that was AEW Beach Break. Did you like it? Let us know. Send us a message. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at WrestleLife Radio and on Twitter at WrestleLife Pod. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at WrestleLife Matt. And you can follow Micah on WrestleLife Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for hanging out with us. And we hope you all have an absolutely wonderful day.
Bye.
Bye.